It is August 14th, and I'm Thomas Rob.
And the last party round table.
It sure is.
Yep. Rachel is not here today.
I'm filling in for her.
And so Andrew is filling in, and then we have Eugene. And so
it takes two people to fill in for Rachel.
That does. Yeah,
that's pretty impressive.
When I'm not here, we never have anyone to fill in for me. So I think that says a lot. I guess that's for another day.
Well,
but welcome everyone. It's actually, this weekend's been a pretty rainy weekend here in the Ozarks, and been kind of refreshing actually to have some rain around here, and so I've kind of been inside most of the day.
Yeah.
But anyway, we are gearing up for the Knights Party Family Congress.
That's about 2 weeks away.
Right, September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, Labor Day weekend. It will be here before you know it. And So
Andrew, are you excited about that?
Totally.
Fantastic. And Eugene, you
get over there. I'm excited. I always am.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah? Your wife excited?
Yeah, all the time.
Well, I think it's really nice because the Knights Party Family Congress, it's really a full weekend of just fun, being inspired, kind of being rejuvenated, and carrying this message to our people. But it's just a really great time for fellowship, and that's one thing I think most people don't have nowadays is that personal fellowship. People can get on Facebook, they can get on other social media. And as a reason, people have gotten lazy as actually traveling to a conference, traveling to a retreat. And people really need to have that face-to-face contact. It's vitally important.
Yeah.
People
feel so isolated.
Right.
And I know when you were up there, before you moved down here.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt?
I did. I was nervous the first time I came. You know, I mean, it sounded great, but you know, not being someone experiencing something, you don't know. You know, but you know, when my wife and I arrived, you know, it wasn't long before people started talking to us. You know, made us feel welcome. And now, years later, you know, we come and see old friends now and make new friends every year. And now my wife and I are, you know, chat to the new faces and welcome them in and.
Yeah, well, that's really important. People do get nervous, I understand, coming for the first time. And because you see these images on TV so often that the media puts out, you know, these terrible people doing terrible things or just looking rough, looking unfriendly, looking mean, you know.
Well, they like to use that word compound.
Compound, yeah.
I don't know where the walls are. I just see some trees.
Yeah, you know? Guards around.
Some squirrels, you know, rabbits. You know,
yeah,
you know.
Our guards are squirrels and the rabbits and an old white dog, you know, and which doesn't move very fast anymore.
No.
So,
But yeah, it's, I mean, they, you know, the media obviously traditionally has always been very liberal, left-leaning. And the media always portrays that as the white nationalist movement in general, that these people are extremists, that they're out of touch of reality with society, and that they're just all abnormal people. And they don't want them to know that the people that's in, you know, the Knights Party or just in the white resistance in general, that for the most part, they're just good family people. They're people that loves their God and loves their race. They don't like to see the direction that this country is taken, and they really want to change it. They want it to preserve our way of life, and they don't like the change that they're seeing. And so they want that disconnection. They don't want the average people to have someone that they can rally behind. And so that's why there's always that effort to try to disenfranchise the masses of people.
And for the most part, they're very successful at it.
Right, they have. And even though they are successful from the standpoint of trying to disconnect the average people, there is still a huge portion of people that privately believes like us. They privately don't want homosexuality in America. They don't want race mixing. They don't want this massive immigration. Don't want Muslims. They want the same things that we want. And they're aware of that. That's why they're always pounding on the negativity about the white resistance, because they know there's a huge population out there that still has not given up hope and is not willing to go along with their agenda.
I think that's part of the phenomenon with Donald Trump.
Right.
Is because Donald Trump really validates what we've been saying for a long time. You know, that most American people are tired of these political parties, do want a return to traditional Christian values in the country, do want to feel that they can walk down the streets safely, don't like the idea of this invasion coming in from, whether it be legal or illegal, don't like this invasion. They feel they've lost their country. A Reuters news service recently said that 57% of them the American people don't feel at home, can't identify with what America has become. They feel like strangers in their own country. And this anger that's been out there for a long time, which we have said was out there, and yet media would often scoff as if we're out of touch with with reality. In fact, was very much in touch with reality. And Donald Trump himself was able to tap into that because he had the money to break through the control of the media, and so they couldn't ignore him. So there is a change that's taking place, and there are people who are, and people, some of the people listening to this here may be some of those people, you know, maybe somebody who's looking and wondering just what this thing is all about.
Yeah. Well, there was a recent poll that came out just a few days ago that kind of discussed a little bit about, not really Donald Trump, about whether or not Hillary Clinton is believable. And this poll was on racial lines. And the majority of white teenagers, young people, believe that Hillary Clinton has been lying about her emails, has not been truthful, and where the majority of the non-whites are giving her the benefit of doubt. So, I mean, even with the youngsters, they still have this sense of what's right and what is wrong. And I think that's kind of revealing in this last poll that was taken regarding Hillary Clinton, you know, and her emails. Because ultimately, it still comes down to race. I mean, everything comes down to race and how we look at society and our culture. It always comes down to race, and people don't want to talk about it. And that's what we see all the time, even in these polls. That's in this last poll, didn't even divide up between the men and women. It had included all white women and all white men in their polls. It was classifications of just race. And so that's why there's just this continual effort every day about, you know, evil, or, you know, white people are, is in general, you know, from the liberal media.
Andrew, what did we have our conferences? What are some of the things you like about our conferences?
Well, I enjoy the food we have.
Food is very important.
We have several good speakers. I don't know if Paul Fromm is going to be there.
He won't be here this time, no.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Now, you don't get out there and play in the playground anymore, do you?
No, I don't.
You got a little bit too big for that.
I'm a little bit more mature now.
Yeah. A little bit.
A little bit more mature.
But now, we did get a zip line. It won't be installed by a conference. But by Faith and Freedom, we'll have a zip line installed. Did you know we got one?
I knew we were talking about it.
Well, we got it. So we got it in a box sitting over there, ready to be installed by energetic people to put up, build a platform for it. So that's going to be fun. And people, it does have a weight limit on it. So, you know, some big old boys can't ride it. But it's up to 200 pounds.
Right.
So that covers.
Well, mainly it's for kids.
Yeah, mainly for kids. Right. You know, or some bigger kids or older younger dads who still think they're kids.
Yeah, well, if it's up to 200 pounds, I might be able to get on it.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you, of course, Andrew said about the food I don't know if you mentioned anything else, but she has speakers, I guess.
Speakers.
And there's music.
There's music. Yeah.
We drive a bonfire.
Saturday, usually we have an ice cream social.
Yes, with ice cream.
With ice cream. And hot fudge sundaes and syrup and stuff like that. And usually sometime during the weekend, then there's a nature hike, for the kids. And the kids always love that because where we have our conference, in the Ozarks, we're out in the country. It's basically a retreat. And so there's caves around. There's a creek around. And you're not downtown major city. You don't have to worry about helicopters flying over,
honking horns, ambulance, gunshots, screaming, somebody on the front porch screaming at their neighbor or screaming at their wife, and all those delightful nature sounds.
Absolutely. Now,
because when you're in the ghetto, you hear a lot of natural sounds.
Yes, and you don't have to worry about
he got weed! All the natural sounds of the nature, of the jungle.
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, you will not hear that. But it really is a retreat, and that's why when we talk about it's a retreat, it really is. Because people that live in your cities, they come out there out here to the conference, and they're just always amazed just how peaceful it is. And I think that's the biggest thing that we want people to come when they leave is to know that they can come here, they can relax, their kids are safe, their spouses are safe. And they can just walk around and enjoy themselves. And that's something that is so much needed nowadays.
But we installed that pond that really added to the environment.
Absolutely. And we had some members from Ohio that came up. They own their own business. And they came up here and they built a aesthetic pond. And we have a nice porch that people can sit around.
There's no fishing.
No fishing.
We need to have a sign that says no fishing.
Yeah, no fishing. there's really some nice fish. There's park benches around it. They get to sit there, and you have the water coming down the hill,
bubbly creek.
Yeah, and it's very laid out, very nice with all the different rocks.
It is very relaxing, and there's umbrellas up there for the day, and it's hot.
Right.
Need some shade.
And it really is a nice place, and we got. Men and women's cabins that people they come here that they can stay. Usually we request $10 for a nominal fee, and for a bunk. Yeah, not for the whole cabin, for the bunk. Yes, right, Andrew. And it really is a first come first serve. You get here and if it's all filled up, you can pitch a tent. I guess
That's why we encourage people to register beforehand.
Register. So it's very important that people register so we know how many people will be here. Kind of good estimation. And plus, then we have to know how much food to buy for the weekend. And then we have the traditional cross lighting Sunday evening. That's kind of like the cherry on top of the cake, And it's really nice for the cross lighting. Just kind of a nice ceremony. And so we'll be getting that prepared here in the next couple weeks. And so it's really starting to come together here before Congress and everyone out there really make plans to be here.
Yeah, they can register at KKK.com or they just call the office at 870-427-3414. And they get registered, wife and family and husband and kids. And the whole crew, pick up hitchhiker along the road. Bring grandma.
Yeah.
And bring them all.
So, Eugene, what was your favorite part of Congress? Or do you have a favorite part?
I have a few.
Yeah.
Like Andrew said, the guest speakers.
Yes.
It's really informative. It's really spiritually uplifting. It recharges
both
myself and my wife. I feel, we can always improve on our walk in Christianity, and my wife and I just feel charged, and as a couple working together and being with the Lord, and having a better marriage, and it helps with that.
Well, it's very important.
Well, let's switch gears here for a second.
Yeah.
You know how the latest, I shouldn't say the latest, but they really push this idea that if you want to be safe in your home, you should put a little sign that this is a gun-free zone.
It is. I always feel safe because I have 1 mile.
Yeah, you feel safe?
I do.
Yeah.
Because I know if anyone tries to break in, they won't, they'll see that sign and they can be depressed and leave.
Yeah, because if you go through, effort. Yeah. Seriously, if you go through a lot of effort, Eugene.
Yeah.
If you go through a lot of effort staking out a home that you want to bust into and rob, you go through all this effort, you go buy your gun, you get your ammunition, you practice, you put a lot of work into it.
Right.
And then the big night comes, you're already got your black cape on, a black mask, and unless you're black, then you don't need the hood. And then you're geared up, ready to go, you're excited about it, you know, you listen to some motivational tapes or motivational speakers. And say, this is the night, I'm excited.
And you do it.
I can do it. And you get to the house to bust in and commit rape and random in the house. And then the sign says gun-free zone. Really? After all that effort, that can be depressing.
It is.
The nerve of some people.
Yeah.
And they basically have to walk away in shame.
They do.
Because they have a gun. They didn't realize that they couldn't bring their gun.
Yeah, and a lot of people, that was going to be their first TV they were going to steal.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that was going to be a whole new life for them. You know, their upward mobility into a higher income bracket.
Yeah.
Yeah, with their very first TV and maybe the first radio, you know, first rape.
It's just not
going to
happen.
It's not going to happen. It's a gun-free zone.
Right.
So, but anyway, Sweden, they kind of got inspired by that.
Oh, they did?
Yeah. And because, you know, Sweden is the rape capital of the world.
Absolutely.
I mean, if I had become rape, South Africa is right there too. So, anyway, and so many of these Muslims are raping Swedish girls.
Right.
And they have come out the way to stop it cold in the tracks.
How's that?
They are passing out bracelets for Swedish girls to wear. And the bracelet says, please don't rape me.
Oh, that's nice.
And
That's going to just prevent.
Well, yeah, because you get some Muslim and he wants to rape this girl and then he sees that bracelet. What is he going to do?
He's going to feel guilty.
Well, yeah.
He's going to see the bracelet and says, please don't rape me. And they're gonna feel sad.
Yeah, some of them say, please don't touch me. Yeah. So the Swedish government is passing these bracelets out to Swedish girls.
Well, the thing is, you have to ask nicely. Please don't rape me. Please.
Yeah,
don't you gotta
say
me.
Please. Yeah,
it's very polite.
Yeah, because if you just say don't rape me, that's kind of rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They might be set off.
Yeah. So you say please don't touch me. Yeah. And so the passing is out to the girls. But someone said that there is a little problem with that, though.
What?
Is that the Muslim don't read Swedish. Mm-hmm. And the words, please don't rape me, are in Swedish. And the Muslims don't read Swedish. Yeah. Don't comprehend what it says. So, anyway, that is the newest thing in Sweden to help prevent rapes.
Wow. You think they'd put that in Arabic or something?
You think so? Yeah. Or whatever kind of language they speak. Wow. The but, you know, unfortunately, I can see where some Muslims now are going to be confused. Because does that mean if a girl doesn't have a bracelet, that means she wants to be raped?
She wants to be raped.
Yeah. The only ones that want to be raped are the ones with the bracelet. If you don't have a bracelet, that means you want it.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm looking up this what you're talking about now about that. 77% of rapes in Sweden is committed by the 2% Muslim male population. And so overwhelming majority, 77%, this one statistic of rapes in Sweden is from Muslims. And they only make up 2% of the population. You know,
and what is the statistic for Swedish women?
I don't know. I guess I can.
Seems to me,
up.
I read the other day, maybe in this article I have here, but it seems to me I read that 1 out of 5 Swedish women can be expected to be raped in their lifetime.
Right.
With the current, you know, levels of rapes.
Right. And Sweden is one of the countries where they now have the so-called refugees that are coming in. I know Switzerland, I believe, is one too, but Sweden. That the Muslim, they have to go through a class to let them know that rape is not accepted in Sweden. It's not an accepted culture. And so that's what's very alarming, is you actually have to let the refugees know that rape is not accepted here, you know. And so that's pretty disturbing, that you have to have a class and try to inform these non-whites that you cannot rape the white women in Sweden. And that shows that basically in their culture, it's very much accepted and performed in these Muslim countries. I don't know what it's called, but basically have a bunch of men that surround a woman and they'll rape them so they can't see who's actually doing that.
Yeah, there's a name for that. I think I've got it here. And it's called Tarush.
Tarush.
I probably pronounced it wrong. It's spelled Tharrush.
Right.
Tarush. And that's where it's like a game where the Muslim people surround a girl that's defenseless, obviously, and they block the view from anybody. They might do this right in the middle of a shopping center or shopping mall. They surround this girl, and then anybody's intimidated because, you know, these people carry knives and guns and so forth, so you're intimidated to try to intervene. And the girls are out in the center like an arena, you know, like a bullfight or something, you know, like they're in an arena.
Right.
And then they're sexually assaulted, and nobody getting through to even stop that. And you know, they got a game for it. Just like here, they got the polar bear games or knockout games, the black. So this is the terrible part of their culture that we're being forced to accept among our white nations.
Well, it's different names, but it's the same people. And so that's their culture. And what's amazing is when people think that you can all magically transplant these people into a white country, that they're magically going to be Swedish. They're magically going to have the same ideas and cultures of your white Swedish men and women, and that they're just, it's just like they cross that line, they're all magically going to be the same people.
Yeah.
And people actually believe it.
Yeah. some of these Muslims were raping these girls, and it was like the Tarush game. Those who are against it, they just classify them as, those who are against it, who don't understand their Muslim culture, is coming from an old male attitude. You know, so, you know, it's just an old male attitude that doesn't believe in raping girls.
Now, Brennan, and I guess it probably be with any country, but like with South Africa, with the apartheid, basically, you know, after it changed
because you've known some people from South Africa.
Yeah, from South Africa. What, I mean, I know you probably can't just say, you know, off the hand with the statistics, but what do you know as far as the rape culture in South Africa after apartheid was removed?
I'm not too familiar with after apartheid. A lot of people that I've known there have left, taken.
So South Africa wasn't the same country?
No, when apartheid was instituted, I'll give you this example. When apartheid was instituted and time curfews were placed in white neighborhoods, crime dropped to zero. Burglaries specifically dropped to zero. In white neighborhoods.
Wow.
Well, I heard somebody on TV the other day talking about how crime in America is really dropping, lowering. And there was some liberal person, and they were pumping the success of Obama, and says how how crime has been lowered throughout the country as a whole. And now the cities are still an increase. But as a whole, it's dropped around the country. And the person in the comment, a conservative comment, well, that's because the reason crime has been dropping throughout the country is because gun sales are going through the roof.
Right.
More people got guns. And that's why there's less crime, because people got guns. And there was a book written a few years ago. In fact, you met the author, Jason, where a guy wrote a book, More Guns, Less Crime.
Yeah.
A guns prevent crime, not increase crime.
Yeah, more, you call more guns, less crime.
And you met the author on that book. I've seen him on TV. He's sometimes called upon to appear in guest talk shows and so forth on TV.
Right. Well, the name is John Locke, and he used to be a professor at Harvard, Yale, your Ivy League schools, professor. And he did, and I think he's actually has updated a couple of times, but when I met him in law school in, I believe it was 98, 99, actually, I picked him up from the airport and took him back because I was with the Federalist Society. And we had him speak there, and he had written a book called More Guns, Less Crime, in which he took all the FBI statistics in the United States of all the counties in the United States. I think there's around like 3,400 counties in the United States, and went by each county, each state, and basically it was a 10-year study. So this wasn't something that he just clicked on the internet, obviously, because it wasn't really that rampant at that time. I mean, so he spent 10 years doing the study, and basically your states that had more guns, your concealed weapon permit holders and all that, the hot crimes, which are rape and robbery and aggravated assault and murders, are statistically overwhelmingly low. And then your states where guns are not around, California, your major cities, where they're more restricted and there's less guns, then your hot crimes are significantly higher. And this was not something that he used his own study. This was the FBI's own studies, you know. And I think he's updated a couple of times. But, yeah, I mean the evidence is very clear that your areas where there's more guns, it's just people are not going to go and commit your rapes and murders and robberies for the most part when people are packing.
And Coulter mentioned a while back, she said it's not a gun problem. The demographic problem.
Right.
And that is true. That's why this year alone in Chicago, close to 500 people have been murdered. And these are black people shooting other black people.
Oh, this, their own neighborhoods and stuff like that. You know, and you don't have that in your large towns where there's majority white people. I don't really know any major city where there's overwhelmingly white. I guess there's probably some out there, but it really is a demographic problem. You know, they're all third world countries. Every major city out there.
Well, I think in a way with guns, your liberals are really just the best salesmen, because whenever they start saying gun control, then people go and buy a couple. People who don't have them or never had them just start buying them.
Yeah. Well, because they're afraid that the guns are going to get taken from them and they're going to be confiscated. So they're going to take the guns and if they have to dig them and bury them. So if guns are confiscated, they'll have them in the future.
Gun sales among women are increasing too.
Right.
That could really fix Sweden's great problem right
there. Yeah, they'll be passing out bracelets. They'll be passing out 45s. Yeah.
What was the rules in South Africa? Did they encourage citizens to carry guns in South Africa?
Since the fall of South Africa, they've made it very difficult. In fact, now to be able just to purchase there's about a 2-year wait on your handgun, and there are examinations that you have to go through to qualify you. And it's just a way for them to fail mostly white-skinned people.
Right.
Not to have guns.
Yeah. And now, over in South Africa, before the apartheid, was guns still restricted, or could you go and still purchase firearms?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, so they were more, I guess, more open, I guess.
Right.
Okay.
Right. I just wanted to mention just a week ago, when you had mentioned Hillary Clinton, a week ago, I viewed a clip a couple times where it was pretty scary, where Hillary Clinton was saying to the effect, possible, maybe you know better, where she was saying maybe certain religious and laws would have to be broken.
Yeah, she spoke at a conference, women Living for Women or something like that, in April, and she made a comment that she said we got these all various laws passed and so forth to protect women. That's of course the little, you know, horse she's trying to ride, and she said, but in order to really make them effective, deep-seated morals and religious and faith-based beliefs need to be changed. Right. And that's a, I view that as a direct attack against Christianity.
Right.
And because Christianity is the bulwark that is combating this liberal, and I'm not sure, the word liberal has various meanings among different people, but in this country here, liberal would be closely associated with communistic philosophy. And this, so combating the liberal trend or push to force its position upon people and eradicate their Christian faith.
But, well, that the comment sounds a little Islamophobic, frankly. I don't know what the Muslim community thinks about that.
Well, I don't know. You speak about Islam. I think it's... Andrew says whenever he sees a Muslim woman on TV, his comment is, she needs to put on more burqa. People say, take off the burqas.
Got too much skin around the eyes.
Have you seen them? You better add more burqa. Add more burqa. Yeah. But this election is heated up pretty good with Donald Trump and Hillary. I don't know. I tell you, they keep talking about how Donald Trump being hammered in the polls. I don't know how accurate that is. I mean, nobody wants to believe the polls when they go against your what you
right.
want. Everybody wants to believe when they favor you. So, you know, I don't want to fall into the category, oh, the polls are all lying. But sometimes you wonder, you know.
Well, yeah, there is such an extreme hatred against Trump because of the fact that they don't want anyone that has any type of similarities from the standpoint of being a white racialist, and that's what basically Trump represents. You know, just a white Christian man, regardless of him being a white nationalist. We know he's not, but that's what the enemy is portraying him to be is basically a white racialist, and so that's why they hate them. And so yes, they have that extreme hatred, and they're going to have polls, and polls are can be set up in a way that gets the results that you want.
Well,
and they do that all the time.
You can just call people up, like in the phone polls. They'll usually have, say, 400 people. You can just call up most liberal neighborhood you can find, like a Florida poll. Just call up people in Miami.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And so there's a lot of things that they will do in order to get it so that if you want a certain result, then you go ahead and contact those people that get those results. And like you said, Andrew, you know, going and contacting people in Florida to in a liberal area that says, are you in favor of Trump, or are you do you like how Trump is talking, or his whatever the question may be. And if you know that those people are going to not have a favorable idea of Trump, then they're going to say, oh, a recent poll was taken and 80% of the people are now not in favor of Trump.
Well, yeah. I've noticed that they've had multiple polls of people saying how much they trust the two candidates. And they have multiple polls where people are saying they don't trust Trump. They trust Hillary more than Trump,
yeah.
Which I find that hard to believe.
Right.
Because, yeah. I mean, Trump, he's been saying what he wants to say the entire time.
Right.
Otherwise, he wouldn't get blasted by the media so
yeah.
often.
It's like they're probably wanting to get puppets, really.
Yeah. Yeah. You can trust Trump to say what he feels.
Yeah.
Hillary, you don't know.
Right.
As far as polls, I mean, when that vote came down in Britain about the leaving the EU, all the polls there show that the vote to leave the EU is going to fail. And then it passed.
Right.
And they were kind of shocked by it. And so,
Well, it's because it's still ultimately it's going to come down to race.
Yeah, and but people don't like to identify with what had been perceived as a negative position.
Right.
So if Donald Trump had been hammered as a negative position, then people are not going to as much say I'm for Trump as even if they might be in the privacy of the voting booth.
Right.
To a pollster, they're apprehensive in saying that. So they skid around the question differently so they don't come out and sound like a Trump supporter.
Right. More people are going to be willing to vote for Trump in their private voting booth where no one can see them how they're voting. They have to say it out loud or even on a survey. You know, people are definitely afraid to be considered racist or being considered, you know, aligning themselves to someone that the perception is that he doesn't know what he's doing and everything else. And it's going to still come down to race.
Trump's big thing is that he has the silent majority behind him. And so far, I don't think any of them are voting in polls.
Yeah.
So.
Well, we'll find out. I tell you, the people, the real pigs in all this election process is not the Democrats. The real pigs, the so-called conservatives,
right,
who are trying to blast Trump. You know, those are the real pigs.
Well,
you know, it's like you're standing in a circle, shooting like a firing squad, a circle firing squad.
Yeah.
You know, shooting that. I mean, they're shooting each other.
Well, their idea is okay. We don't want Trump, so we'd rather have Hillary being elected. Because when the next presidential race comes around, then we'll have a candidate that we can basically control and manipulate with our own agenda. And that's a really unfortunate line of thinking because you'll never have a Republican. If you want to just go on that theory, you'll never have a Republican president again if Hillary's elected because the fact that the demographics have shifted. And for the next 8 years, you think we have the problems with Obama. She's just going to put the pedal all the way down to the floor and allow more and more immigrants coming in and illegal aliens and so-called legal immigrants. And they're all from your non-white countries.
Geraldo, who is not a conservative by any means, he said on TV just the other day, he said if Donald Trump loses this election, he said there'll never be a Republican in national politics in his lifetime.
Right.
Again, and unless the Republican Party becomes, and I'm adding this part, unless the Republican Party become full-on Democratic, you know, just like another version of the Democratic Party,
right?
Totally sell out the ideals of our forefathers, our race, our heritage, our children, sell it all out, and just become another stamp of the Democrats.
Right.
You'll never see a Republican, Christian, conservative, national politician again.
Right.
It won't happen.
Well, and that's something we have. That's what we've been saying for several decades now. Is that's the shift. That is what will eventually happen, and that's why we've been saying for the last 10, 15 years at least now that we're going to start seeing a balkanization. We're going to start seeing basically a division in the country. We're going to start seeing white people moving into the heartland of America because statistically, that is what is happening. Nationally, yes, that's not going to happen. But locally, you're going to see a lot more of an emphasis of white people moving in, thinking of themselves as a race, thinking of themselves as a culture. And that is where you're going to really start seeing, to me, some dynamic things happening.
Right. In that area they call the flyover country.
Absolutely.
You know, they ignore the flyover country for the East Coast news center and the West Coast entertainment center.
Right.
And everybody in between are insignificant people just hanging on to the guns of the religion.
Because what people don't understand is that when you have the same course of action, just economically, it's not going to be able to sustain itself. You're going to hit critical mass.
We're at $20 trillion.
Right. And when you hit that critical mass, these major states that has your vast majority of non-whites living in it, they're going to collapse. California, Michigan, I'll look at Detroit, your eastern states. I mean, these major states that have your non-white countries, they will economically collapse, and the federal government is not going to be able to bail them out because they don't have no money. They have no funds. And that's where you're going to see states where there's majority white people that will start taking control, and they will start governing locally.
Right.
And it's in, I mean, Time Magazine, I think it was, or Newsweek even had that in an article.
2010. Yeah, an article called The White Anxiety Crisis. Yeah,
And they just confirmed what we've been saying for all these years.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they said though the majority of Americans or Americans, people live in America, the year 2042 will be non-white. The majority of those non-whites will be in the coastal states. So there's a huge area that in the heartland, wherever that location may be. I don't know where the heartland is, but I know it's not Philadelphia, and I know it's not Los Angeles. And according to Time Magazine, that what we're gonna see is white people begin to re-identify with their racial heritage, and out of the heartland, demagogues will arise who will attempt to exploit this white awakening. And we see this is happening. And how soon will it happen? We don't know. And
but the thing is, that's what we have been saying 20, 25, 30 years. So we've been saying that for a long time before we even seen this mess now. We were talking about that. And so we've been very accurate on what was going to occur. And so that's why, nationally, people kind of get depressed saying, okay, we won't see a major, conservative being the president. But really, that's not going to be the issue. The issue is locally, people are going to start considering themselves as a race again. And that's something that's vitally important, because all politics are local. And that's something that we all need to be doing. Andrew, I know with you being a younger person, do you see on the internet, teenagers thinking themselves as a race or kind of varies?
I think a lot more teenagers are aware than people give them credit for. I kind of see a mix between more liberal and conservative teenagers.
I inject a thought there, Andrew, and what you're saying. I think it's almost obvious to me that white kids tend to not be as polluted or liberal as the media wants to imply. And I think the reason I say that is, first off, this article you made reference to a little bit ago, where most white kids think Hillary Clinton is a crook. Her emails reveal that. Most non-white kids think, rah-rah, Hillary Clinton's our gal. And so, but the point is, they never classify white youth, except for this one article we saw, you never see them classified the trending thoughts of white kids versus non-white kids.
Right.
They always say millennials are more accepted of homosexuals, millennials are more accepted of race mixing, millennials are more accepted of liberal socialist programs, blah, 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 because they want to, and they do the same thing with women. Women are more socially liberal, and women are more accepting to the LGBT community, and women are more accepting to women because they want to take and rob white-thinking women and demoralize them, and create a rift, in a sense that I see this happening sometimes in white national circles. They want to create a rift where white nationalist men automatically think white women are traitors.
Right.
And
statistically, white women are more loyal to their culture and are actively trying to seek a white male, where white men statistically don't have that same agenda.
Yeah.
It seems like they really go for the Asians, frankly.
Yeah, absolutely. So the fact is that they hide the reality of white women as being perhaps more conservative. In the youth, they're doing the same thing. They're trying to lump all white. So white kids who are trying to find their identity as a teenager, thinking, I'm all alone. All white kids, according to the newspaper, according to the TV, according to all the news reports, millennials, everybody my age are socialists, or everybody my age are favor the gay lesbian marriages. Everybody my age are for or accept the intolerance of interracial marriage. I must be the lone wolf in the pack. I must be the loner. And so that, again, is done to isolate the racial awakening among white youths. And I think the fact that they never divide what the percentage of white kids who are, I'll use the phrase conservatives versus those who are liberal, they never show the difference in those statistics, means they're trying to cover up something.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, Andrew, when you get on social media and stuff like that, you kind of see that the same thing. I mean, as far as white, let me ask you this: do you see white teenagers being concerned economically of the future as much, or is it just more of kind of just social? Or kind of, or is it more of a mixed? Yeah. So I know there's a lot of white, because with the being in the youth corps director, I see a lot of emails from kids that they're concerned culturally. I mean, obviously they're concerned economically, but they're concerned culturally what is happening, because they've been told stories of how great America was. And they see, obviously I've seen pictures. And they know America used to be really a great country and a white country. And they see, even in their own lifetime, this change happening. And it's something that they are very concerned about, culturally and morally. And I don't have as many people, many kids that's talking about economically, but you know, culturally and morally. Yeah. How much time do we have, Dad?
We have about 12 minutes.
About 12 minutes. Well, we kind of started off with the Knights Party Family Congress coming up. We have also
September 2nd, 3rd, and 4th. So mark your calendar and start packing. Pack your suitcases.
I always tell people, you know, it's very easy to do. You just mark it on your calendar that you're going to be there and you show up.
Yeah.
People can find an excuse not to go somewhere.
Right.
They can always find an excuse, well, I don't have the money, or I don't have the time. Well, those are just all excuses. You know, we are talking about literally your survival of your family, survival of your children. And you stop me making excuses, and you just need to do it. You don't find excuses to get a new car. You don't find excuses to go on vacation. You don't find excuses to try to do something fun, but in order to preserve your culture and your family and give your children's hope, don't find an excuse for that. That to me, that's the number one importance.
Yeah. And pack your bags, pack your kids, pack your wife and family, pack your husband if you need to, pack everybody you can.
Don't pack the dogs, but you have to pack the dogs too.
Don't pack the dog, but your aunts and uncles and relatives and cousins, and rent a U-Haul bus and head on down here to the Ozarks.
And then in October, the fourth Saturday in October, we have the European American Heritage Festival in Pulaski, Tennessee.
That's October 22nd, all day long, down on the square, Saturday. Giles County Courthouse.
That's a really great event. Because it is the only place in the United States that there is a Walk for White Pride. You literally get to walk around the square demonstrating how great your people are, showing pride in your culture. You get to carry a flag representing possibly a country where your people may hail from. It could be Scotland or England, Scandinavian country. You can, if your people even came from South Africa, real South Africans, right. The real white people, then you can carry
Russia,
that. Russia, absolutely. You get to carry that Belgium flag. And what I like about it is you see all these children, the youth, and they're carrying the flags. You see 5-year-olds, you see 8, 9-year-olds. they're carrying the flags, and they're just seeing the smile on their face, and the pride that's just glowing out their facial expressions, how proud they are that they are able to stand up for their race and culture. And that is something that is so much is needed. And so they're there, they get to do that. But throughout the day, it's kind of like what I call a folk festival. You know, there's different booths there. We have,
we have nice weather. There've been a couple of years we've been doing this since 1986.
Right.
So there've been a couple of years we've been cold and a little nasty, but, usually by mid-morning, it may start out that way. Usually by mid-morning, it warms up. Yeah. It's pretty nice.
And on the other side of the square, you know, it's a farmer's market. And it's just a relaxed atmosphere. People off the street get to go through. They walk through the different booths. There's a playground.
And what I find amazing, Jason, every now and then, not a lot, but every now and then, some news story will make reference to the Klan coming to Pulaski. Then they come out and say, and all the stores shut down and close up, and the square is vacant because all the businesses have the doors locked up. And it's a total lie.
It is.
It's a total lie. They just totally lie about it.
Yeah.
Because we walk across the street and get a shake at the drugstore.
Yeah.
It's a total lie.
Yeah. The stores are not shut down. You get to go across. Yeah. I mean, convenience store. But like you said, you know, there's the one that's your old time, like a pharmacy, you get to go in the back, and they traditionally, you know, make ice cream floats and molds and stuff like that. And they're open. I mean, yeah, it's a busy little town, and your typical Norman Rockwell type of town.
But the media was sitting close, and the vast overwhelming majority of American people hearing that, who are never in Pulaski, they really think it'll all be rejected, and it's a lie.
It's a lie. Yeah,
it's amazing.
And, you know, not all the media will say that, but there are a few that will try to make that statement. But, yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's just a nice event. It's a relaxed atmosphere, and people really enjoy themselves. And then there's a private meeting in the evening where we have a few speakers. And it's just a really great event. But that's the fourth Saturday in October.
October 22nd.
October 27th. 22nd?
22nd.
22nd, 2-2.
Yeah.
October 22nd. And, Pulaski, Tennessee. Again, make plans to be there.
It's 70 miles south of Nashville.
And there's a lot of history around
Pulaski,
Tennessee. Yeah, obviously, the Klan was founded there, but you got David Crockett. And there's a David Crockett National Park there.
Up the road, about 60 miles, is where the Battle of Shiloh was fought at.
There's Natchez Trail that you can drive through. Beautiful area.
Just a little bit north of Pulaski, about 30 miles north of Pulaski, is the home of President Polk.
And of course, Andrew Jackson was in that from Tennessee. But there's just a lot of history in Tennessee and all through that surrounding area. My mind went blank, but the Confederate soldier, the 19-year-old, I believe it was, who died there in Pulaski County, or Giles County, I believe. And I can't remember his name, but
I'm going to say Sam Davis, but I believe it's Sam Davis.
Yeah. Basically was accused of spying against the North, and he was hung, and he said that he was willing to die 1,000 deaths than betray one of his friends. And I think that's the quote. And so there's just a lot of history in that area, and really something that people need to be bringing their families to, especially their children, so they can see how important it is.
Again, you can make plans to come to our event and see all this other stuff as well.
Right. Make a vacation
out of it. All these museums.
Right.
Make a vacation out of it.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of history among our people, and we've been so disconnected. You know, it's like that one professor from a university in Texas said a few years ago, quoted in the April edition, excuse me, January, February edition of Time Magazine, excuse me, not Time Magazine, it was,
Newsweek?
No, Atlantic.
Atlantic?
The Atlantic Magazine. The edition came out right after Obama became president.
Yes. Okay.
Said the head article, the main front page story was the end of white America. And it was in 2009, right after his election, and the inauguration was, of course, in January 2009. And where a professor says that he has white kids come to him and says, I don't have a culture. I don't have a culture to be proud of. I feel we feel culturally broke. And, you know, that's really sad. It's really sad that kids have been so misdirected and disconnected from the great history of our people that they think that there's no culture. You look at Europe and you look at going back thousands of years, the cathedrals and castles and battles and accomplishments that have been done by our people all through Europe over a couple thousand years of history, and for some kid to assume he don't have a culture, that's really pathetic. It really shows misdirection and misinformation that have been given to these kids by our colleges and universities.
Well, our people are great at making all this history, and we're great at keeping track of it as well.
Yeah. Absolutely, and we have kept track of it because you look, they've got records showing the aqueduct system in ancient Rome, in the blueprints for, you know, before Christ. They can show the aqueduct records and blueprints that are built in ancient Rome. So we've always been people that have kept those things and passed it down to future generations. So. Well, anyway, we're almost out of time here, and we got 2.5 minutes to chatter.
Any wise words, Eugene?
Eugene laughs.
Especially when I said that we only have 2 minutes.
Put the pressure on.
So, now, you've never been to Pulaski.
No.
Never been to Pulaski. Of course, been Congress, obviously, and so, but yeah, that's something, you know, you may be, hopefully be able to go to and enjoy, anyone out there, just please make plans, it's vitally important, but a lot of things are going here at the camp here.
Yeah, we had some reporters here yesterday from
South Africa?
Well, he was from South Africa, but he represented a Turkish news network.
Right.
And so we get good stories from the media a lot. I don't know if people should watch the stories that are dealing with the Knights. Mostly they're fairly good. What will happen on this one, I don't know. But the point is that we have had media over the years come up the hill there at center. Because we do have a message of hope. We do have a powerful message for our people. And because of that, it's newsworthy. And so we had them there just yesterday for about 3 hours. And so it'll be interesting what develops out of that over the next 3 or 4 weeks. And we have this happen a lot. You know, news agency, local news, we have them come in from all over constantly. And we're just always happy to talk to them because they are a conduit to the masses. And they are, we have to work at it, but we get good stories quite often. And so we're happy with that. So, we're busy. Now we're getting ready for Congress coming up here in just a couple weeks. We're very busy keeping everything looking nice, getting schedules, getting speakers, getting everything, cabins ready. Getting food prepared, you know, all the things that needs to be done. And we're looking for a great time here on September 2, 3, and 4.
Well, everyone needs to make plans to be there.
Okay. So. Well, I guess we're going to close it up then. And until next time, This is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Andrew Thomas.
Eugene.
Okay, we're just reminding you all to love your God and love your people.